another Rock Bite where we speak our truth, slay sacred cows, and sometimes agree to disagree. This is an outdoor podcast that aims for the head, and today we are back with another piece of gear and another beer. That's right, it's your weekly dose of gear and beer. I'm Colin True. I spent over 20 years working for brands and makers in the outdoor industry.
And I'm Justin Hausman. I'm a journalist and professional gear reviewer, senior editor at Adventure Journal, and also certified beer expert.
I'm a certified beer expert and an executive senior editor at Super Adventure Journal.
That could be. It's possible. Yeah, that'd be a good name for another magazine.
It's just like Adventure Journal, only with a cape.
It's bigger, and it has a cape.
Today, we will first be reviewing a piece of gear the way you would expect gear to be reviewed on the Rock Fight. We don't talk about stack height, geometry, or width underfoot. We talk about the experience, our likes and our dislikes. And then we take that piece of gear and pair it with the perfect post-activity beverage because Justin, well, he's a Cicerone. Like he said, he's a certified beer expert. And you can look it up. It is indeed a real thing. The bottom line is here is where you'll get the pairings that matter most, gear and beer. And Justin, what gear and what beer are we reviewing today?
So today we're talking about Feral wetsuits. Summertime is coming up.
Woo!
Colin got himself a 3.2, 3 millimeters in the body area and 2 millimeters in the arms and legs. That's what that means, by the way, in case you didn't know. And 10-barrel, we're continuing our 10-barrel series with Always Down, which is a, what are they calling that? Is that a double IPA?
It's got to be. It's 9.0.
That's a lot of numbers. That's a lot
of
alcohol.
You might hear
numbers.
Us die today, folks. That might happen.
Well, we're not going to drink the whole beers on the air, are we? Now we got to go pick up our kids after this.
I have some driving to do.
This is our third week of 10-barrel beers. We started with the Cloud Mentality, which we adored. And then last week we did the Apocalypse, which we also really liked. And this week it's Always Down, which leaves, it's a 3+. Yeah, it's one more to go next week. I'm not going to read the last line that Colin wrote because I don't like that word. Colin?
I wanted to see if you were like Ron Burgundy.
Just read whatever's
on the teleprompter.
No, I am able to look ahead as I'm reading. I'm not reading that, but congratulations on spelling it correctly.
Before we get into our Feral review of Feral wetsuits, a couple of housekeeping items. First, we want you to sign up for Rock Bites newsletter. You know why? Because we think you'll like it. It's the kind of email you want to receive and you won't want to immediately unsubscribe from. Second to all of our new listeners, welcome to the Rock Fight and to Gear and Beer. Please click that follow button on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or whatever app you are listening to us on.
Lastly, do you want to tell us about your favorite gear and beer? We want to hear from you. We really do. Honestly, please do send us, if there's gear that you want to check out, that you want our take on, or beer that you would like our take on, please send us a email or hit us up on Instagram or LinkedIn or whatever. Send your suggestions and feedback to myrockfight@gmail.com.
All right, man, let's get into the gear. So
you want me to put a wetsuit on?
Yeah, let's do it.
I don't want to do that. It'd be so hot. So let's dive in here. So Feral wetsuits is, I guess you would call them like a boutique wetsuit brand. You know, if you're a hardcore surfer, and I hope there's some hardcore surfers listening to the Rock Fight, you'll know Feral, but if you're not, you probably won't. They're not one of the big three, which is like Rip Curl, Billabong, and Quicksilver. But they're way better than all those other wetsuit brands. Feral was started by a couple guys in the Bay Area. So full disclosure here, Colin's actually going to take the lead on his thoughts on the suit, because I'm really good friends with one of the owners, Alex, and I wear exclusively Feral wetsuits, but that's kind of why he's wearing one, because I wouldn't stop talking about them. I would not shut up about them.
That's not much to do with your friend. You wouldn't wear it if you didn't like it.
Very good point. That is absolutely true.
You're like, my friend owns this brand. Yeah. He's really cool.
But the wetsuits are garbage. I mean, that's totally true. That would actually be the case. But they're not. And that's all I've worn for years. And most of my friends all wear them as well. They're pretty popular in the Bay Area. But it was started by a couple guys who are from the Bay Area. They had regular jobs and have surfed their whole lives and then just decided they didn't like their regular jobs and they were going to try to do a wetsuit company. And so they started out, they haven't really changed. I mean, they don't really do any marketing. It's just the two of them. They don't have any staff or anything. There's like some people that work at like a distribution center that like box up the suits and they deal with them sometimes, but they don't work exclusively for Feral. They work for whoever else is getting stuff at that distribution center. So that's it. And they've grown really well through like word of mouth and mostly that. I think like some of the, like some, like I think Surfline and maybe Stab magazine. I guess I've written reviews for them before at Surfer Magazine back in the day. So other than that though, that's pretty much word of mouth. And if you come to the Bay Area and you paddle out anywhere, you're going to be dominated by people in Feral wetsuits. So they have a big following here. And they are almost entirely direct to consumer, which means they can sell them for a little bit cheaper. They are in a few stores, but not many. And that's kind of by design, although they're not like anti-surf shop or anything like that. They just, you know, it's a lot cheaper to just sell it direct to you. But their whole
better margins
deal
for them.
Yeah. And their whole deal is they use Yamamoto neoprene. I think it's called like Yamamoto number 39, which is just like the particular kind of neoprene that they use, which is a Japanese neoprene that is so good. And the best wetsuits in the world come with that. And its whole thing is that it's way more water phobic. Is that the right word? It's non-water permeable.
Impermeable.
Impermeable, yeah.
Yeah.
And so you don't need, like, so if you go, you know, if you go to buy a wetsuit today and you go grab like an XL or a Billabong or something, 9 times out of 10, it's going to be the inside of the suit is going to have a bunch of like random fibrous stuff that's going to feel really good. And it's probably bright orange and it's probably called like infra thermal bomb nuclear technology heating element, something or other. And it's going to be some kind of fibrous material that they claim will keep you warmer, but it doesn't. I mean, really, that the only thing in a wetsuit that keeps you warm is the neoprene. And so they use super high quality neoprene. They don't need any fancy liner. So the suits are really light. Like when you pick one up compared to like a big brand, you'll be shocked at how much lighter they are. They're usually a little bit thinner and they last forever. I still have the first one I got from them 7 or 8 years ago. And I wore it the other day without even realizing it, that it was the original one until I saw the logo. But they're very stripped down. They're all black. They have like a little Feral logo on it. That's it. Real simple, really well made. And they're a real, like a true surfer's wetsuit. There's no gimmicks. There's no bullshit. They're just a great wetsuit for a pretty good price that will last you forever. And that's their whole deal.
Yeah, the Yamamoto neoprene was interesting learning about because you know there's been a lot of buzz about Ulex, that which is another sort of, you know, greener wetsuit material that Patagonia's made famous, which is derived from the Ulex tree, right? Isn't that what it is? It's an actual it's a plant.
The tree's not called Ulex. The brand is. It's like
there
a,
you go.
I forget. It's actually come. It used to be from a from a plant that you grew
it's
like
a plant,
like a plant, but now it's a tree.
Okay.
And I forget what the tree's called.
Which is great, and that's sustainable too. Now, Yamamoto neoprene is more sustainable than traditional neoprene, which comes from petroleum. But Yamamoto neoprene comes from limestone. It doesn't get rated as highly because limestone is finite versus Ulex can be the plant that we get Ulex from is derived that can be replanted. You can, you know, plant it and grow more of it if you want to. However, Yamamoto neoprene still better for the earth than than you would get from regular neoprene, which is all petroleum based. I think the interesting thing about wetsuits in general, I mean, is there a sort of maybe less understood product by sort of people who don't wear them all the time that is as simple as a wetsuit? I mean, how many times you talk to somebody like, do you wear swim trunks under it? What do you wear underneath it? It's almost like bike shorts in a way of like, no, the best way to wear a wetsuit is just to strip naked and put it on. I mean, that's how you wear a wetsuit.
I forgot about that. Yeah, I guess some people, well, women will often wear like bikinis under a wetsuit.
Bikini top, yeah.
Yeah, and there's probably very good reasons for that. I've never really thought about it, but no, I mean, it's funny. Back in the olden days, you always had to wear a rash guard under a wetsuit. That was like, I mean, rash guards are called that theoretically because you wear them when you're wearing trunks and you don't want to get your chest all rashed up. But we always used to have to wear rash guards under wetsuits because a long time ago, you'd always get rashes like in your armpits and stuff like that. But wetsuits have come a really long way. You know, they're lined with like a very thin jersey, which is like a really soft against your skin, which is really nice. But yeah, it's so simple. You just throw them on, you're naked under there and it feels fantastic. I mean, they feel really good.
That's why Keanu Reeves in Point Break looks like he's surfing in an ascot because he has that rash guard underneath the suit.
It's so funny.
It's very 1991.
You had to have those. I hadn't thought about in years. I haven't thought about them in years. But now I'm just picturing like I'd have like these stinky, gross rash guards just like draped in my shower all the time, you know, in the 90s. Did you, by the way, before we go any further, I don't know that is all Yamamoto made with limestone?
I found.
Okay. I think that's true. I just wasn't sure. I assume that's the case, but I honestly wasn't sure. I haven't dug way into Yamamoto.
Well, because I knew it was like better than regular neoprene, but not as good as Ulex. And the more and more I dug in it, like, I just kept finding things saying, yeah, it's made from limestone. And the reason why that's not as good as Ulex is because limestone is finite.
Well, it's also, it's not even so much, I don't even think that's really where this is. I mean, they wouldn't build themselves as sustainable, but the real, if you're going to like try to think about it that way, the real benefit is that they just last a long time. So
yeah.
When I, you know, I don't surf nearly as much as I used to, but most of my life I surfed every day. And, you know, living right by the beach, you'd often surf twice a day. You know, in my early 20s, I'd surf three times a day. I mean, that's pretty common.
Right.
And my wetsuits, you know, big brands, big, expensive, top-of-the-line wetsuits, they would rarely last a year. Like, very rarely before the tape that covers the seams would start to come off. That's usually what would happen first. Or they would just kind of delam and they would separate. But, yeah, you always had to get a new wetsuit every year, always. But these last so long. I mean, like, yeah. I've had some of the tape, parts of the tape come off on some of the ferrules I've had, like you'd expect. But like I said, that first one still looks brand new. Lord knows how many sessions I've had. That's super incredible. I mean, very few things like that.
We're going to get into it in a second. Are not want to say they're disposable, but with regular use will not last a long time.
Well, plus if you pulled out like an O'Neill from 7 years ago, it would look ridiculous. Cause like like so many other wetsuit brands, like there's just so much crap going on. And it would look dated and weird, but they look exactly the same. They changed the color of the logo and like very minor things, like the zipper will be different or something like that. Or the zipper pole itself might be look different, but that's it.
Yeah, but that's just an improvement to design, not like an aesthetic point of view, like you're describing.
Very simple. Very, very simple.
So not to like pump my own tires, but I think I am a kind of a good candidate for this review because I've only been surfing for 8 years, you know, and even
has
then
been
there's
that
been
long?
Fits. Yeah, I was trying to remember. It was like, I think it was the first time I went surfing was summer 2016. We were in Panama and I took a lesson. So actually the first time I went surfing, I didn't even have to wear a wetsuit, which was kind of cool. And so, but over the course of 8 years, it's been fits and starts, you know, get to go when I can go and with kids and lifestyle. I don't surf that consistently as I should if I actually want to become a decent surfer. But I've had a variety of wetsuit experiences. And I think when you're talking about ferrule, you mentioned that this is a surfer's wetsuit, and now having surfed in this, I wouldn't. If you had said that to me before, I probably wouldn't have understood what you meant. But now having tried the product, I get what you mean. And if you're somebody who's really looking to just start surfing, and you're listening to this podcast, I would say you could investigate ferrule. But here's why Justin called it a surfer's wetsuit. So my first suit was a Patagonia R3, which is a Ulex and also a warm wetsuit, and like, you kind of need the jaws of life to get in and out of that suit. It really, really tough to get in and out. That's one that was a problem with the Ulex. And also, it's a heavier suit because I was living in Washington and I needed a warmer suit surfing up there. Then I did get an R1. Lately, my go-to, especially through the winter months, is a Vizsla 7Cs, which is a 4.3. And then I also have a Buell 2mm spring suit. And, you know, my experience, especially with the Vizsla and the Buell, it's just so easy and a joy to put on and off. I mean, there's plenty of times in the spring and the summer where I don't really need a wetsuit and I might just put on the spring suit anyway, just because it's like, I might get a little cold out there. And it's as easy to put on and off versus some of the heavier suits where it's like, it's kind of, you know, a hassle to get them on and off. But even the Vizsla 4.3, super stretchy, like built for you to enjoy putting this wetsuit on. It's going to be it's easy on, off, all that kind of stuff. The thing about my immediate notice on the ferrule was, I told Justin this, I went out yesterday for the first time, and I thought they had sent me the wrong size, because I was started getting worried. I'm like, oh shit, we're going to record a podcast this tomorrow, and maybe they sent me the wrong size. Because as I'm getting my foot on, really tight around the wrists and ankles, and then also, even when it's on, it just felt almost, I don't know if compressive is the word, but like, it definitely was the right size, but it definitely didn't have that sort of nice, stretchy, flowy feel like the Vizsla or the Buell that I've worn in the past have. Now, as soon as though, and I'm like, well, let me get in the water, see how it is. And then as soon as I was in the water and I started paddling, and it was an immediate, light goes on, aha moment, right? The way the suit is designed, the way the neoprene works, there was no resistance on my paddle stroke whatsoever. I may as well have been wearing the spring suit or frankly, even just a rash guard. It was incredible. Like I kept stopping and paddling and seeing like, am I imagining this? It actually was really impressive to me that how easy it was to paddle with the suit on. And then also just the more I was in the water and the way the suit started to kind of feel like it was conforming to my body was even more impressive. It's not, you know, any wetsuit, even if it's, you know, as long as it's fitting well, it should feel really snug. Even if it's kind of stretchy.
Yeah.
This just had a different vibe. It literally was like a skin suit in a way, only it was like 3.2. You know, I mean, it was like a thicker, I can't really even describe like the feeling that I had wearing it. But it was that immediate like thing of like, I think I said to Justin yesterday when we were chatting about it after I went out, I remember getting my first real mountain bike, and it was a cross-country race bike, and I never had a bike like that before. And I remember getting on it and hitting, there was a Rocky Mountain element, and I remember pressing down on the crank and just feeling the bike wanting to take off and go fast. And again, that aha moment of like, oh, this is what a real bike is. This is what a fast bike feels like. You kind of hear like, oh, that's a fast bike. You're like, I've ridden bikes. How much faster could a bike actually be? And then you experience what that feels like. I had a similar experience wearing the Feral yesterday compared to other wetsuits I've worn.
And so that's entirely because of the high quality neoprene. I mean, that's what you're feeling. Like you're feeling, like the word premium gets like tossed around. It doesn't really mean jack shit most of the time. But what you're feeling is that top of the line, you can't get better neoprene for a wetsuit. That's as good as it gets. And
yeah.
So it feels really good against your skin. Like the weight feels right. The clinginess feels right. I don't have any information to back this up, but I've long assumed that, a lot of the big kind of standard wetsuit makers are making wetsuits on purpose that feel good when you put them on, like in a dressing room.
Yeah.
And that's because they know that, they know that if you like pull on this like buttery smooth wetsuit in a dressing room at a surf shop, that you're going to feel like, oh my God, this is so comfortable. This is perfect. But like that, if it's that stretchy when it's dry, that means it's going to pull itself apart.
Typically, and get heavy. They hold so much more water than the Yamamoto neoprene.
Exactly.
Well.
And like, so typically like anything else, right? Like any kind of like comp level, high level, piece of sports equipment, like, you know, the super, super stretchy wetsuits where like, you'll see like advertising campaigns where someone will like stand on it with one, you know, they'll put their foot on the arm and pull the whole wetsuit over their head. That's cool. But that also means it's going to last 3 months. You know, and so like it's just that's just the case. Like that really stretchy neoprene doesn't last that long, and so it's usually cheaper. But the cool thing about the Ferals is that they're so much lighter because they don't have all the extra crap on the inside. They don't have an extra fuzzy lining that doesn't do anything and that makes them heavy and weighs them down and gets waterlogged. So even, you know, they might not be as like wow stretchy when you're not wearing it, but once you're actually surfing in it, you're like, oh yeah, this is made for surfing. It's not made for trying on in a dressing room. It's made to actually surf. So
I'd say if you're, you know, it's $415, you know, so it's about twice the cost of like a typical suit. I mean, you might be able to find some even cheaper
suits.
Twice
the cost of a cheap suit. But I mean, like most good suits are going to be at least $350 minimum.
Yeah. When you're comparing it to the Patagonias and stuff like that, that's a good point. Like, but if you're considering a wetsuit and you're getting sucked in by the, you know, the O'Neills or the, you know, the Quicksilvers that are, you know, like, oh, look, it's on, you know, Sierra's website for $99. If you surf and with any regularity, like even if it's a couple of times a year, this is a worthy investment.
Yeah.
If you're literally like, I don't know if I'll ever surf again, but I just kind of want a wetsuit, then great. Buy the $100 wetsuit. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But
that's true.
I can't imagine now going back, having now put this on and trying to surf in something else. It would bother the hell out of me.
Yeah. I mean, if you are even reasonably like convinced that you're going to like try surfing more than once, I would definitely spend the money on a better one. Cause it's also like, you know, I wear mine. I wear one to body surf, you know, like I'll wear one to play in the water with my kids, you know, like I don't always have to be surfing to wear it. So there's other applications for it. You know, I'll wear it sometimes if I go stand up paddling in the wintertime, you know?
Sure.
So yeah, but I mean, there's something to be said. If you throw out the concept of like sustainability and like, you know, buying things that last, there is something to be said for buying like $100 shitty ass wetsuit on like Amazon if you just want to try surfing for the day, you know. But again, if it's something that you feel like you're going to want to get into, there's really nothing more important if you live in a cold water environment than a good wetsuit. I mean, it's like boots for hiking or something like that. Like that's the one thing you need to spend money. You should spend more money on your wetsuit probably than a surfboard if you're just starting out, because any surfboard will float you. But if you're not comfortable in the water, you're not going to enjoy yourself.
Bottom line is that cheap. I mean, you know, the wetsuit, like you said, you have your first Feral, which, you know, if it was anything else, you definitely wouldn't have your first one. I still have. Yeah. Right.
I think I may have gotten to like 2 years on some of my older wetsuits, but I like even like my like boots and maybe this is what you're getting at, like for most of my like hiking stuff is less than 8 years old, you know, like it wears out, but these don't, at least not for me.
So I did want to look into kind of the category. So I was thinking about that and all the brands you mentioned, and I think I mentioned a couple other ones. So I did find a website that said that there are 97 surfing wetsuit brands globally.
Yeah, all right.
The top 10. So this is the top 10, and it was only one I didn't recognize. So O'Neill number one, then Rip Curl / Roxy. Actually, I think that they're not together. Is Rip Curl and Roxy still together anymore? I know that the
Roxy was Quicksilver. Roxy was always a Quicksilver imprint.
That's right.
But I don't know much about like.
Yeah, I'm not sure either
anymore.
But then Billabong, Patagonia, Quicksilver, Excel, Body Glove, Hurley, Volcom, and Ghoul. Do you know Ghoul?
It's Gull. Yeah, they've been around. They've been around for a long time.
Okay.
I mean, that thing is like with direct to consumer, there's been a big rise in brands.
Well, the thing is, I mean, you say 97 so brands, and it, I mean, I guess it doesn't sound like a lot. I mean, I guess it is a lot. I mean, because, you know, there's, why couldn't we just have a handful that, you know, the global distribution? But I just, this is one of those products where even the cheap one, unless you're doing like what you described when you were surfing at your, surfing the hardest, like if all I had was my 7Cs 4.3, the amount I'm surfing right now, that thing's going to last me a long, long
time.
Well,
that's for sure true. Well,
right?
If you keep it in good shape.
And that's I always rinse it off afterwards, hang it up to dry, all that kind of stuff.
That's the other thing that's nice about the higher quality neoprene. It's not like it's finicky. Like it's you can probably get away with less maintenance on a Feral than you would on like an Excel, in my experience. But I'm also meticulous about cleaning my wetsuits, which is strange because I'm not like that by anything else.
But this is an odd category where even if there was like 200 brands, it's all kind of making the same thing. And if somebody owns one of these, I mean, it's the turnover is pretty low for most people on a wetsuit, and probably the ability to pass it on to somebody else or whatever, have continue the life of it is pretty high. I mean, you know, it's not like if you had a pair of running shoes, even if you didn't wear them a lot, a few years later, you might be like, eh, these are out of style
whatever. You can sell. I've sold used wetsuits. You can. There's a small market for used wetsuits. There definitely is.
All right, so we got to rate the Feral. So. I mean, actually, you go first. I mean, you've been surfing these things a long time. Like, what would you rate Feral's wetsuits? Are you going to go? You're going to go right immediate 10?
I don't know. I mean,
that'd be back to back tens for you.
No. I mean, I think there's probably like some little improvements that could be made. You know, like,
right now, his buddy Alex is like the image of Alex's face is hovering right in front of you.
No,
you know, you're feeling guilty.
Not
you know?
At all. I don't get any money from them. If I worked there, I'm sure. I mean, there's like I don't know. There's little things I don't like. I feel like. There's little things I might change on like the fit on some of them. I kind of wish they had different colors. Like I don't necessarily love all black wetsuits. But the other thing that's cool is they make weird thicknesses. Like they make a 2 millimeter full, which is wild. Like nobody does that.
Such a great idea.
Yeah.
Especially for us pansies down here in Southern California.
Well, it's also something like idea. I might take that to Hawaii because like, you know, surfing in board shorts looks great. And it is great if you do it every day of your life. But like, you know, like nothing will chafe you faster than raw skin on like salty surfboard with like wax on it. Like they will tear you up. So like so will the reef. So like a nice 2 mil wetsuit. Like I would totally pack a 2 mil full arms and full leg
wetsuit. Well, as we discussed, you're usually going to Hawaii in the winter and you're very white. So,
yeah, so it's nice, but they also make my favorite suit of all time, which is a hooded three mil. So it's a 3.3. So usually when you see a wetsuit and it's like a 4.3 or a 5.4, 99% of the time, that means the body, like the core part of the suit is going to be the bigger number. That's where it's thicker. And then in the arms and legs, it'll be a little bit thinner, but they make a 3.3, which is 3 mil of the brainer the whole way with a hood on it. And it is absurdly cool. Like you can wear I can wear that because I'm, you know, lived here my whole, you know, I've lived north of Santa Barbara my whole life. I wear that in the winter. Like I wear that all year long and it's fantastic and it's thinner than a 4.3 and like, it feels really good. And like, but you can wear it from like 58. Yeah. You wear it from like 55 degrees to like 60 degrees, which is, that doesn't sound like much. That's a giant swing in like water temperature warmth. 60, you're like, oh, I could probably do this in trunks. 55, you're like, I'm never getting in the ocean again. And like,
that's true, actually.
It's weird how that doesn't, you wouldn't think that would be that big of a difference. But yeah, so that's the other cool thing about them is they make suits of varying thicknesses that like, that's just a really thoughtful thing to do that like Billabong isn't going to do that. I mean, I don't know, maybe Billabong makes a full too, but I doubt
it. You're stalling.
Oh yeah. Sorry. The rating. Let's give him a 9. I mean, it's a great wetsuit. I've never had a better one and I really mean that, but I'm sure there's improvements that could be made. But yeah. I'd say a 9.
I was actually thinking 8.9. So it's funny that we're pretty close. I mean, I think that's mostly because I'm so high on how different it is right now, especially in my surfing career and like the other wetsuits I've worn. My only other sort of, the only two, well, I guess the Vissla and the Buell compared to the Patagonia had been my kind of biggest point of differentiation, but that wasn't, it was kind of a no brainer. Like, okay, well, the Patagonias are great. They're better for the environment, but goddamn, the Vissla and the Buell are so much more comfortable. I don't know if I want to go back to the Patagonia.
No.
This had that, okay, little, not as easy to get in and out of, like, you know, the Vissar or the Buell, but once it's on, holy shit. And you feel like, I feel more like a surfer, and I just can't get over the design and the flexibility in the shoulders and everything else. So yeah,
you know what else is cool? I mean, a lot of people work at Rip Curl. A lot of people work at Patagonia. A lot of people work at Body Glove. A lot of people work at Quicksilver. So I mean, people, you know, people need jobs, blah, blah, blah. Two people work at Feral. Two.
Yep. Yep.
So like when you buy a wetsuit from Feral, Alex and his partner Buzz get the money. That's it. Nobody else does, which is pretty rad. You know, like it's just that. Just there, well, it could not be less corporate.
And selfishly, I feel like, you know, I feel like I got the little hipster thing like pays off too. Like I know about this, you know, and you know, yeah. I'm not going to see many Feral wetsuits out there, but I got a Feral.
They're starting to sell a lot more of them down south, I hear, though. So you might start seeing them more and more.
All right, now let's turn our attention to the activity at the break. This day, the break, it's happening today. The put in the trailhead.
Yeah, the surf break.
We're going to crack open the cooler and imbibe a beverage so we can celebrate our wins and losses in the backcountry. Let's have a beer. So we just got back to the truck. We stripped off our Feral wetsuit. We changed into something warm and dry. And after a killer session, we open the cooler and pull out a 10-barrel Always Down. Justin, why is this the pairing that matters most to the Feral wetsuit?
Well, because this is, we only have four.
This is what we said last week.
Well, it's still true. This one does have some snowboarding on it. And a mountain bike.
I think this is, it's a burly beer. It's a 9.0, right?
It's
I think
a double
this is
IPA.
Like, man, we need to numb up a little bit. It's been a long day.
Yeah.
We did two sessions, you know?
Yeah. You just
morning,
want one
afternoon.
Beer. You're only going to have one beer and then pass
You're
out.
You're
going to
have one beer and
time.
Pass out.
Yeah.
Maybe we drive home first before we don't have this at the break. We go
home
first.
Yeah, you kind of want to. Yeah, good point. Yes, that's definitely. Well, we probably live across the street from the beach.
That's a good point.
We're hardcore.
God, we should live across the street from the beach, don't you think?
No, I've done that.
Should we buy a house?
No, I've done that.
The Rock Fight house?
Well, I mean, go ahead. Yes, you should. You should. You should. We should do that. I mean, if I got to pick the beach.
Well, if I'm buying the house, I'm picking the beach. You're moving to San Diego, buddy. That's what's happening.
I'm not.
It's warmer down here.
I just want to go on the record that if I had a free house on the beach in San Diego or my normal expensive mortgage in Marin County, far from the ocean, relatively speaking, I would choose Marin County.
I don't believe you.
Well, I mean.
You can wear bedrocks year round.
That's true. Actually, that would be kind of a hard call. Living by the beach is pretty sweet, but it also just
listen,
like the entire world is like right on your ass all the time, like right behind you.
That's true. We should probably edit this out, though, because other people are going to be like, these two motherfuckers are debating about these two amazing places that they live in. So let's move on.
That's a good point.
Let's get into this one. Let's not dick around with this. I think we've talked about, you know, we'll talk about 10 barrel a little bit more, but let's get into this 9.0. Let's get into this monster.
Okay. All right. We're open it. Ready?
You ready?
Yeah, here it comes.
Wait. 3, 2, 1.
It's reaching out of the can at me. It's trying to get me. I'm afraid that this is going to taste like it is at 9%, and I'm going to be like, oh, shit.
It's funny you said, just smelling it, I feel like it's a little less potent as the apocalypse was. The apocalypse like kind of hit you right in the nose.
So double IPAs are going to be, it may be all over the place, but it's probably going to be malty as hell. Almost sweet tasting, I would guess, almost, because there's going to be so much malt in this to get to the high alcohol content. I bet it's going to be kind of chewy. All right, I'm going in. Yeah, that's exactly what I expected. Yeah, that's a strong beer, dude. That's a strong beer. I could not drink that whole can, I don't think.
Well, the first sip, actually way more mild. What's the word? Like, I kind of expected
it's
it to
smooth.
Hit me a little harder.
It's smooth. It's super smooth.
Oh, yeah, it's warm going down, though, isn't it?
It's super smooth, but holy shit, that's 9%. That's a lot of booze.
Wow. But it doesn't taste, you know, when you get to, like the barrel-aged stuff? And it's
close. I mean,
it tastes
aged,
more like a liquor in a way.
Yeah,
you know?
But we're not that far off. And also to be honest, it's a well made beer. It's really balanced. It's really smooth. I'm going to be honest. I don't understand the point of a beer like this. I really don't. A lot of people will love these beers. I get it. But
when would you drink this?
I don't know. I mean, honestly, like I'd rather have two beers than one super gnarly beer. That's always been my opinion. I mean, like, you would, on draft, you'd probably only get 8 ounces of this, I would guess.
Well, I was just about to say, so back in my drinking heyday, it was like, you know, the smallest portion you were going to get was going to be a 12-ounce can or a bottle, right? Because otherwise you're just going to go get a pitcher, you're going to get a pint glass, whatever. And then in the last few years, realizing as I go out to eat, like, oh, you can get a 10-ounce pour, a 8-ounce pour, even for, like, something without high you can get a smaller glass of it if you don't want to have a lot to drink.
Yeah.
At a lot of craft beer places. I'm so in love with that decision because there's a lot of times you're like, oh, I'm driving the family around, whatever. Mm-hmm. I want to have a couple of drinks with dinner. I don't want a giant glass of beer, especially if it's something like this where I know it's going to mess me up right away. So I guess I could see if you had a smaller, like you said, an 8 ounce version of this. But man, even right now, like it's, my mouth is warm and my, I can feel my, like my esophagus is warm, right?
It tastes good though. Like, I mean, it's a good beer. It tastes good.
Is this like a holiday beer? Like you have this at the holiday party kind of thing?
Yeah, I can see that. Not like a work one. I mean, so one of these is effectively like having two Budweisers in a 12-ounce can. I mean, basically.
Right.
And so it's like you have two of these, it's like having four. But I swear to God, I could have four Budweisers and probably not even really be that buzzed. If I had two of these, I'd be fucked. So I don't really understand.
There's a math your weekend
thing that's weird. But I will say, it tastes really good. It does
taste
pretty good.
It tastes so good.
I mean, they've done a good job with it, but this is a weapon. I don't know. I just can't imagine a scenario where I'm like, yeah, hand me one of those cans. I'm going to have a can of that and just have it like at the campsite. I guess if I was just going to have one, I mean, honestly, I might. I just like having more than one.
Okay. So we're really noticing the higher alcohol content in this versus kind of the other couple of beers we drank from anybody, not even just 10 barrel. So what is the difference then when you get to it, like the double IPA versus the regular IPA? Like where's the line, you know, where one, you leap from one to the other, and like what's the process to kind of result in the double IPA?
Usually you stumble down drunk between one to the other is how it works normally. As far as I know, there's not like an official like doubling of anything. It just means it's a lot stronger. So like,
So the process to brew isn't any different?
No, not at all. And like it doesn't necessarily mean that there's like twice the hops or twice the barley. I mean, I'm sure that there are beers that do that, but there's not like an official, it's not like you have to do something and now it's a double IPA. But typically, that's effectively what it means. So you would put in, you know, way more hops than you would normally put in and way more barley than you would normally put in. And when there's more barley, there's more sugars for the yeast to eat and to convert to alcohol. So typically... that's the barley content compared to like the water content, right? So like, you might be thinking, well, like a stout is like super gnarly and is like really dark and that must be in a lot of barley, but it isn't always really strong. And it's not about like the roasting or anything like that. You can have a very clear, super strong beer too. So like Belgians, for example, are often, you'll get like a double or a triple in Belgians and it's the same deal. Like it doesn't mean that there's like three times anything. Mm. It's just like a general sort of like understanding of if it's a double, it has probably way more alcohol than a single, which is a hard to find single Belgians. They exist, but it's hard to find. Usually you just start with a double.
We've talked about Belgians as a comp a lot.
We should probably drink some Belgians. Yeah. I don't drink a lot of Belgian beers because they're usually the ones that we get are pretty strong. They're much more of like an experience beer. I mean, there are plenty of just like quaffable, drinkable Belgian beers out there. But like for the most part, the ones when you get excited about a Belgian, it's usually a bit stronger and it's like, oh, I'll just have one of these with dinner and that's kind of it. But yeah, we should do some. They just don't lend themselves well to like the outdoors often because they're usually, I don't know, there's no reason why they couldn't. It's just like not what I think about when I'm like hot and sweaty and I've been doing something all day. I don't think like, now I want to double, you know?
I don't think I've had a ton of Belgian beers. I just feel like the ones I've had, I haven't really liked that much. But so I'd be interested in sort of like revisiting it with some knowledge on it and kind of like actually thinking about why I might like it or why I may not. But on the, so what's the point, right? I guess of the higher alcohol, right? Because if you compare, okay, we had three in a row now. We did the Cloud Mentality, the Apocalypse, and now this one. And I would say that this one, on its own merits, it tastes good. I like the way it tastes. I could see someone valuing that sort of kind of hard alcohol burn a little bit. However, if you still line them up, I'm going to choose the Cloud Mentality and maybe on the rare occasion, the Apocalypse, almost every single time over Always Down. So is it truly a subjective thing? Is it kind of bring it back to the gear point of view? Is it a line expansion thing? Like, well, we have these other ones where we could do this and now it's different. I'm not saying I don't like it. It does taste good. This tasted good. I've had plenty of doubles that I don't like. This one tastes good, but I don't know. What's the mentality behind kind of creating this as part of the category, I guess?
That's a good question. I'm going to have a sip and think about it.
Yeah, me too.
There's a tendency, I mean, I think one of the big criticisms of IPAs, generally speaking, amongst the general beer drinking public, especially amongst people who don't really think about beer, they just like to drink it, is that it's just too much, right? Like,
You know, it's too much hops. It's too much barley. It's too much, often too much alcohol. Like, it's just a big beer. And so, but there's also obviously like a huge amount of people that really like that, right? Like, I didn't used to like IPAs. Now I love them. And so I can see how you kind of get from like, okay, something like the Cloud Mentality is really, really good. I'd like to have more of all of that, please, in the same beer. And so that's effectively what's happening, you know? It is a subjective thing, you know. It's like some people really like that taste. I mean, there's a sweetness to a higher alcohol beer that is very distinct. And I think, you know, there's times where you might want to like sip on like a 4-ounce version of that, you know. Like, if you want to get into like beer and food pairings, like higher alcohol beers often start to taste better with things that like wine does, right? Like, so you can have like a barley wine and cheese, you know. Like, you wouldn't normally pair like beer with cheese, but you can when you start getting into really high alcohol beers, like the 10s and the 12%ers. They start to have a bit more of like a sophisticated sort of flavor. So I think that that's probably part of it. It's just people really like more. And there's a plenty of people who like want to drink a 2 or 3 9%ers and just get wasted. I mean, that's like, don't discount that. True. I mean, there's a lot of that out there. It's not my thing, but like, I totally understand why it exists. But it's also, you know, it's a bit of a niche thing. Like, I there are probably times in my life where I've wanted, yeah, give me that 9%. I'll try that and just really enjoy a little bit of it. But it's not nearly as often as just having a beer that I can have two of.
You know, at risk of sort of, you know, overly praising 10 Barrel, and maybe this last point I want to make, and we can kind of get into the rating of it, but it's like, I feel like we're in good hands. I feel like there was a purpose behind this beer. I am sure there are beers out there, breweries out there that are more like, you know, I think we could get the alcohol levels way up at all costs, you know? So, and it feels like, I bet there was, you know, this honestly kind of fits in against the apocalypse and the Cloud Mentality. It seems like it does feel like a natural progression from those other two. Now, next week when we get to the Juicy Drama, which is a 9.6, that's probably going to be the ultimate of these four. Like, that might be the one that maybe lets us down the most, I would think,
yeah,
maybe.
Well, yeah, I mean, judging by our willingness to deal with a high-alcohol beer, yeah. I mean, you'll see this a lot where a brewery will do like a series, like a hop series, right? Well, they'll do like a bunch of different beers, maybe different hops. Like, I would have actually liked this series to all be like 6%, right? Let me taste all your different hop profiles and like how you want to deal with them, and that's cool. But I you know, where I can drink the entire beer.
All right, well, what are you gonna rate it?
I think I for some reason lately I felt like just round numbers. I feel like this is an 8.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I don't know what I said about the last one, but this feels like an 8. I mean, it's unquestionably good, you know.
Yeah, I'm trying to decide if is it a, you know, just my personal taste, the judging it on its own merits versus, you know, when would I drink it or how much do I want to drink it. I'm kind of looking. I'm looking back over my past scores right now, and it's like I'm going to go 7.2.
Okay.
Because I don't really know when I would drink it that much, knowing where the current state of my alcohol consumption, but I really did like it. And it's definitely, you know, it shouldn't be below a 7 because it just tastes too good to be lower than that. So I'm going to go there with that.
Love it.
All right. Well, to summarize this episode of Gear in Beer, in our gear category, we have the Feral. Well, all the Feral wetsuits were really talked about, but we talked specifically about the 3-2 wetsuit, which Justin rated a 9 and I rated a 8.9. And then when you get home from your surf session, and making sure you definitely don't have to drive anywhere for the night or maybe even the next few days, the official Cicerone of the Rock Fight suggests that you should enjoy yourself a frosty cold 10 Barrel Always Down, which Justin rated an 8, and I rated a 7.2 on the Gear and Beer scale. We did it again. We keep cranking these out.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Amazing.
We like gear, and we also like beer, so it does make sense. It's not like it's like the stapler and dental surgery show, you know, like we would do way fewer of those.
Right. What's that? Whoever starts that show, probably also a serial killer.
Do you want, are there podcasts about staplers or office supplies, generally speaking?
God, there's gotta be.
I'd listen to it.
I would at least try.
So today we're going to talk about the new AmPad legal pad. So they made some changes this year. The margin line is a different color green than it used to be. And the paper stock has a little bit higher quality pulp, so we're gonna test that with our Bic Streamliner 3.2s and see how that feels. Tom,
the sustainability episode? They're like, oh, there's some new ink in the lines on the paper itself. Yeah, it's a much more 25%
post consumer ink on some of these. That's the buzzword these days in office supplies.
All right, well, that's the show for today. What did you think of this edition of Gear and Beer? Do you have a suggestion for a future edition of Gear and Beer, or do you simply just like Gear and Beer? Send an email to myrockfight@gmail.com. Let us know what you think. The Rock Fight is a production of Rock Fight LLC. For Justin Hausman, I'm Colin True. Thanks for listening. And here to take us out, it's Krista Makes with the Rock Fight fight song. We'll see you next time, Rock Fighters. Rock Fight!